Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, the emotional nature, part two. And before we begin, I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucis Trust organization. Lucis Trust sponsors this show. And Alice Bailey wrote 24 volumes of literature, and the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show comes from the works of Alice Bailey, as does the following thought. There is a great need today for the thinking people of the world to cooperate more fully and freely in the enlightenment of the world. This depends, as far as the individual is concerned, upon the power to live each day as a soul, free from fear, free from self-consciousness, and free from those reactions which stir the astral or emotional body into activity. I think before we go forward with the emotional nature part two, I think we should recap what we did in emotional nature part one. Sarah, would you do that for us?
Yes, we began by discussing the nature of the emotional nature, which is a combination of thought and feeling. If we were really truly animal men, we wouldn't have emotions. We would simply be physical creatures. But we have emotions, sensations, the capacity to suffer, to aspire. That's the higher counterpart of the emotional nature. The lower counterpart of it is the tendency toward glamour. And we talked quite a bit about glamour, as we have in recent programs, because glamour is so associated with the emotional nature. It's the fog that we subject ourselves to when we are dominated by emotion rather than by thought. And it's what causes the distortion through which so many people see the world and their relationships. It's a distortion that's affected by craving for something that exists in some kind of form. If we were completely soul-centered beings, we would not be subject to emotion. We would simply have the compassionate identification with our fellow beings, but not any kind of craving or desire. But until we reach that truly soul-centered state of consciousness, we have to learn to be on guard against the play of emotion, both within ourselves and in our contacts. We talked about the fact that you can be swept up in emotion in a kind of a mob scene, whether it's within a classroom or an office or a family or whatever. Emotions are kind of a gas that can overcome all of us if we're not able to cultivate the standpoint of the observer, as we've talked about in recent programs, one who on some level detaches himself somewhat from what's going on in the world at that moment, and can retreat onto the plane of the mind and simply see objectively what's going on. That's the observer. And that stance, when cultivated, can be enormously liberating.
And, of course, that observer is the position of the soul, the soul that simply is. It exists and it sustains the life of the personality nature, but it isn't really involved.
It reminds me of a statement in the books of Alice Bailey that to the soul there is no light or dark. There is only being and existence. The emotions are the reactions we have to what we think are light and dark, good, bad, feels nice, feels bad. The soul sees none of that.
No, it doesn't react in the same way. And in fact, it doesn't react
at all.
It acts. It acts by sustaining, giving us life and consciousness. And to take that position of the observer, one has to find what they call the middle path, the middle way between all the extremes of the ups and downs of the emotional nature, let's say, from depression to hilarity to good and bad, light and dark. And finding that middle way is not easy because it means finding a balance between these two opposites. It doesn't mean following either path, the left or the right, but finding the balanced way that includes, that integrates both of the extremes in one's life, but at the same time not being caught up in an extreme way in either extreme. And it's finding that middle pathway, the middle channel through all of this emotional distortion that we exist in. And that's the hard part.
Well, I'm glad we did a recap on that. I think it helped a lot of people. But I have a question for you, too. Do spiritual schools have any guidelines for gaining control of the emotions?
Yes, they do. And usually the spiritual schools of development emphasize the practice of meditation on a daily level because that's really the crux of getting into the position of the observer, learning to dissociate yourself from whatever is going on in your environment is cultivated through meditation. And in addition to that, there's the emphasis being placed by the schools on detachment and on harmlessness, the development of harmlessness. How can we develop that capacity? Well, the ancient schools of spiritual training said that the right direction for emotional energy began with the development of harmlessness. And there are three rules that are very ancient for this right direction of emotional energy. They're found in the books of Alice Bailey. Three rules. Rule one is, it's written in a kind of archaic, ancient spiritual type of language, so bear with me. Rule one says, enter thy brother's heart and see his woe, then speak. Let the words spoken convey to him the potent force he needs to loose his chains. Yet loose them not thyself. Thine is the work to speak with understanding. The force received by him will aid him in his work.
And of course that refers to the need to control one's speech, and controlling your thought, and it's the bringing the tendency to criticize under control, isn't it?
That's one form of wrong speech. I often think there's a direct connection between opening the mouth and getting involved in whatever emotional situation one finds oneself. Speech is the direct pathway to emotional difficulty.
It certainly is, and it can produce or it can make or break a relationship. And this is one thing that anyone that's at all conscious of the path or trying to make his way better in the world, then control of speech is one of the first things that you have to tackle.
And it's not saying just be silent, shut up, and don't say anything. It's saying enter thy brother's heart and see his woe, then speak. How many of us pause when we think we're upset with someone or we are dissatisfied with someone? How many of us pause to really try to imagine the world as it appears to that person, to see his woe. Most of us think everybody should see our woe, but I don't know how hard we try to see other woes. It's a use of the imagination to be able to stand in somebody else's moccasins, like the Indian proverb said, walk a mile in another man's moccasins, then speak. Let the words spoken convey to him the potent force he needs to loose his chains, yet loose them not thyself. You can't solve another person's problem for him. Not only is it not possible, but it's not your right. The problem belongs to that person. They're the ones that have to solve it. Even if you could come in, intervene, and fix it all, they wouldn't have learned anything. But what you can do is find the words that will strengthen that person's own inner wisdom.
Yes, sometimes the tendency is to want to straighten this person out and tell him how things should be done, and that's probably the worst thing you can do to really, if you really want to help him, because it doesn't help him to stand on his own legs and find his own solution.
I don't think people want solutions from somebody else. I think what they want is understanding. And it says, thine is the work to speak with understanding. Mm-hmm. People want to be understood. They don't want you to solve their problem for them, but they want you to understand them as they really are.
And that takes an ability to stand apart from that little, your own little self that wants to dominate the conversation, perhaps. And that's a question of selflessness, mm-hmm. and harmlessness, and of the ability to stand back and let this person struggle and find the solution in his own self, in his own being.
I suppose it's also standing apart from the other person's little self. In other words, if you get caught up in their problem, you're not helping them, and you may in fact be reinforcing whatever their difficulty is. If you can foster their own recognition that they have a higher self, they have a soul, they are the soul, they are not the sum total of their problem. That doesn't sum up who they really are. It's just a problem, a difficulty, a limitation, but it isn't the final word on who they are. And if you can somehow perceive and never lose sight of their inner perfect self, the immaculate concept, as a friend of mine puts it, to hold people in the immaculate concept that is their perfect soul, that can be enormously strengthening and encouraging to them.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, The Emotional Nature, Part 2. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company today, and the offer is the book, the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This. I started with that book because it was a wonderful way to introduce myself to the works of Alice Bailey. Every topic or every theme that Alice Bailey has ever written is summarized in Ponder on This. So what I did is I looked at Ponder on This, went chapter by chapter, and found those chapters that I had a very special interest in, and then I explored books in a greater depth. I explored that particular theme in greater depth than the actual book, for example, whether it was esoteric psychology or any of the other 24 volumes. But you might want to start with Ponder on This, a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey, available for $16. The special offer is in the form of free shipping and handling. So what you need to do is send a check or a money order, $16, to Lucis Publishing, L-U-C-I-S for Lucis, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, check a money order, $16, to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And you might make a little note saying you heard about the offer on the show, Inner Sight. And additionally, too, if you have any need to get in touch with Lucis Trust, you can call them on their toll-free number. It's 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-695-8247. N.Y. Lucis. That's 1-866. Think of New York Lucis. We also have a website with WOR. We're on the WOR website. And so if you miss any of the shows and you would like to immediately key into them, well, take a look at the WOR website. It's www.WOR710.com. www.WOR710.com, and you can find the Inner Sight show, and WOR holds it for up to 2 weeks. Also, please continue with your donations. That's the way we stay on the air. We appreciate all the support you've given us in the past, so please continue. That's the way we can do this every week for you, this show, Inner Sight, for you. I'd like to return to our topic. I'm really intrigued by the philosophical implications of the thought that we started with today, the Alice Bailey thought taken from her literature, where it says, live each day as a soul, free from fear, free from self-consciousness, and free from those reactions which stir the astral or emotional body into activity. To me, that's the ideal. Maybe someday I can be spiritually evolved to live the soul aspect of myself, which is probably the true me. But how does one reach that? Free from fear, that's not where I'm at right now. And how do we attain that? And free from self-consciousness? Maybe we should deal with free from fear first.
Well, slowly and with effort and mistakes, I think we can gradually begin to get control of what's happening in our emotional nature, just learn to recognize it, gradually transmute it. I think one of the main ways we can do that is through concern for others, not so much of a focus on the personal separated self. And that's one of the fundamentals of harmlessness, learning to direct your energy and your attention to the need of other human beings. And that's why these ancient rules that we were talking about are so powerful and so effective. We were talking about the first rule, which was really the monitoring of one's speech in a way that is harmless. The second rule?
The second rule has to do with the monitoring of one's thought. And
that's harder.
Rule two is, it's still in the same archaic kind of language, but it reads like this. Enter thy brother's mind and read his thoughts, but only when thy thoughts are pure. Then think, let the thoughts thus created enter thy brother's mind and blend with his. Yet keep detached thyself, for none have the right to sway a brother's mind. The only right there is will make him say, he loves, he stands by, he knows, he thinks with me, and I am strong to do the right. Learn thus to speak, learn thus to think.
I think that's such a powerful vision of loving service to someone who's in emotional difficulty, to create in another person the effect that he thinks with me and I am strong to do the right. What a wonderful service. It isn't intervening in someone's problem and telling them what they should do, because we don't know what they should do. We know what we might do if we had that problem or that difficulty, but it's theirs to solve, and they have to discover for themselves the right solution, the right way to deal with it. We can support someone in such a circumstance by thinking with them. That's not manipulating their mind. That's not brainwashing them or trying to plant ideas in their mind. It is holding a vision or a truth of reality based on love, compassion, selflessness, and sacrifice that might help that person find his way through the maze of whatever his problem is. And having confidence in that person, confidence in the person's soul. I think we forget that people are so much more than just the outer person that we are observing, and that might be quite befuddled and sometimes kind of stupid and sometimes kind of malevolent and selfish. Within every human being there is a perfected soul that is seeking to manifest itself. And if we can hold our vision on that inner perfection, we can be we can help to strengthen the person.
And I think one way to kind of stimulate that soul within, the power of that soul, maybe just to question that person, to draw out the answer from within that person, because I think for every, well, if you ask the right questions of this person, then lead the person to a possible solution, I think he or she will eventually arrive at their own answers, their own the solution to the problem that he's facing or she's facing. And so right questioning is a way of kind of standing apart. You may be able to see the solution to this person's problem, but it's not for you to just simply tell this person what's wrong, what you have to do. It's more educational and more meaningful and more lasting if this person can bring forth the solution to the problem and see it for himself by asking the right questions, the right line of questions.
Another key element of this second rule, though, is enter thy brother's mind and read his thoughts, but only when thy thoughts are pure. Well, that ought to stop all of us. Because how can we claim that our thoughts are pure? It's an ideal that we can hold in mind. In other words, we can't interpret, advise, or analyze another person unless our thoughts are really pure. And what that means to me is unless we see them with pure, unadulterated love, in spite of their imperfections, in spite of their stumbles, on some level, they are already the perfected soul. And keeping your gaze unwaveringly on that inner immaculate concept is one way of purifying your thoughts.
Yes, and you can't have any ulterior motives except you want to heal and help this person. And if you have some motive of your own or some agenda that you're trying to achieve, then that's the wrong approach, as you say. That's not entering thy brother's mind and reading his thoughts only when your thoughts are pure.
Should we go on to Rule 3?
Okay, read Rule 3.
Blend with thy brother's soul and know him as he is. Only upon the plane of soul can this be done. Elsewhere, the blending feeds the fuel of his lower life. Then focus on the plan. Thus will he see the part that he and you and all men play. Thus will he enter into life and know the work accomplished. That one's a little more difficult, and I didn't read it particularly well. But the beginning line is, blend with thy brother's soul and know him as he is. Only on the plane of soul can this be done. Elsewhere, the blending feeds the fuel of his lower life. I think we can do more harm than we realize by focusing and zeroing in on people's shortcomings. We've probably all had this done to us. We probably do it to others, where it's as if we are mechanics who take a tool and go after a defect in a machine. When we do that to other people, we are very likely simply making their problem worse because we're undermining whatever healing attempt is already probably underway by their soul. If we stand with people and see them as they truly are, we're not going to be focusing on their defect. I think we're going to be focusing on their spiritual perfection that is masked by the outer defects.
Yes, and it says to blend with thy brother's soul, and this has to do with divine purpose, because the soul, that's the soul's purpose, is to work out the greater purpose of God in the world.
And then focus on the plan.
The plan is the blueprint by which all souls, the one soul, works in the world through us.
I love these rules because they are rules for harmlessness that bring about emotional control and emotional purity. And the writings of Alice Bailey say that harmlessness is a completed point of view. I love that thought because I think these three rules are giving us an idea of what a completed point of view is. We see a person in their totality. We see them in their completeness. And when that level of view is reached, we don't judge, we don't criticize, we don't condemn. We see the whole person. That's the essence of harmlessness. And if we could cultivate that habit, I think a lot of the emotional difficulty in life would fade away. So we have mentioned these rules. We've mentioned the practice of meditation. There is also the aspect of the evening review that can run back through the major events of the day and identify where emotion might have dominated, where it might have gotten the better of us. If so, perhaps we can learn to see what the kindling factors are, what ignites the situation, and gradually get on top of it.
And we have to always remember that these rules are simply a way of directing astral emotional energy and directing it in the right way for the right purpose, for the right cause. And
maybe for a closing thought, we can remind our listeners that right now, at this transition point from an old age to a new age, there's an enormous vortex of spiritual energy pouring into the world. And that energy, just like sunshine on a garden, is stimulating everything, the weeds and the flowers. And there is a great deal of stress and tension in the world that we are all experiencing. But it's bringing about a break with the past, and I think clearing away a lot of detritus, to use a fancy word, that when we have worked our way through it will enable us to live in a more peaceful and balanced new age. It's a phase. It won't last forever.
Well put.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that is the Alice Bailey book, Ponder on This. Ponder on This is a compilation of extracts from all 24 books by Alice Bailey. It's available for $16. The discount comes in the form of free shipping and handling. What you need to do is send a check or a money order for $16 to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, that's Lucis Publishing, Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you need to get in touch with Lucis Trust for any reason, call 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.